This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Folks, we all know that Doge and what they're doing or what they're not doing, how they're going to do it, how they're going to execute, has been a top-of-mind issue for many folks. And our next guest authored a piece called Memo to Doge, Smarter Tech Alone Won't Deliver Efficiency. We're joined by Ryan Bourne, the R. Evan Scharf Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics, Center for Economic Studies at the Cato Institute. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you.
Ryan, I guess when you can, most people are assuming when you look at the lineup of the folks that make up Doge, they're going to be looking from an IT lens to things more so than any other. And obviously, I think the impetus of your piece kind of drives home the point it's going to take more than that.
Yeah, I think a lot of tech Silicon Valley types, what they really have in mind when they think about reform is changing the personnel of an organization and also changing the technology of an organization. And there's no doubt that the federal government could do with many updates to its IT systems, to its software, and the efficiency that that would bring. It's also true that we do need to see reform of the federal workforce, and Elon Musk has already been trying to kind of eat into that in his initial efforts of looking to make savings. The bigger point that I was trying to make really is just to say the only sustainable way that we're going to reduce the size and scope of the federal government is ultimately to eliminate many of the programs and objectives that it has. And if we don't do that, then yes, you can make some savings on the margins from reducing headcount or improving technology. But you're not going to get anywhere near reducing spending by $2 trillion per year, $1 trillion per year, which is the sort of objective that Elon Musk and others at Doge seem to be aiming for.
You know, what's interesting is one might think that we could do this on a parallel path, but if we're really going after limiting government scope, you certainly don't want to start engaging in spending dollars to improve IT if you're going to eliminate scope, right? I mean, it's not necessary to have that technology behind it. You don't want to just deploy technology for the sake of deploying it. It needs to be weaved into these organizations operationally so they make sense, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, nobody from the Trump administration, I think, was coming in thinking, let's improve technology so to make these DEI programs even more effective in ensuring diversity across the federal workforce. Ultimately, you first of all have to take a stand on what you want the federal government to do, and then try to work out from there, okay, given we've got these objectives, given we've got these things that we have to deliver, how can we do them as efficiently as possible? And to be fair, Elon Musk understands this. Anybody who's read the biography of Elon Musk by Walter Isaacson, the first thing that Elon Musk does whenever he goes into an organization is to eliminate as much as possible on the principle that you only really know that you're cutting enough when you're having to add stuff back because you've actually made the operation less efficient than it could be. So I think his instincts are right on this type of thing. I think the The danger, though, is that because ultimately Doge will need Congress to help it by eliminating some of these programs, eliminating some of these agencies, my fear is that because they won't get that support from Congress or might not get that support from Congress, they'll try and kind of salami slice things up just using executive action. And that, you know, the executive does have some control over personnel, obviously, and it does have control over IT systems. So, you know, my worry is that kind of by default, the things they can control will be updating this software and, you know, changing who's employed by the federal government. I just don't think that's enough.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me, and I'm curious for your reaction. I'm sure you saw the same press conference when Elon was talking about the actual technology or lack thereof that we have deployed by the federal government. It was almost he was shocked and surprised and I think almost angered to find that a lot of our major systems are still on COBOL. And I think it kind of blew him away. He was like thinking, this is not what I expected to find. And then to add insult to injury, some other programs were actually manually handled. When you talk about the pension system debacle, it was kind of like, we are the leading country in the world as it relates to technology. Our own government just doesn't seem to know how to deploy it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And of course, you know, there's not great political incentives to keep this stuff as up to date as it should be. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that Doge has kind of been created through what used to be the U.S. Digital Service. But, you know, there are so many of these perverse things that exist at the federal government level. Every change to a government form at the moment has to go through the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. So you want to change any form that the federal government puts out, it has to go through this agency. And that office has no expertise in user research or form design. So you have this bureaucracy of the bureaucracy that means that, you know, even though there are some things that we've mandated through Congress that the federal government should do, they're kind of tied up in their own internal red tape. They have these old systems that don't work particularly well. And so even when, you know, we as individual citizens and people who live here have to deal with the federal government, it's much more difficult to do so than it should be. And I think that's the kind of frustration that Elon Musk was really getting at. This stuff is needlessly complicated and needlessly kind of old-fashioned technology, given, as you say, all of the innovations that we've seen.
But that kind of highlights and is emblematic of what you're talking about, right? Because technology will not eliminate in and of itself unuseful whips, works and processes. And that's what you just described, right? A whip. You need to fundamentally go in, and one is the scope, what are you doing? But two, reduce the amount of whips before you go deploy the technology, because you know, you would be deploying technology that's no longer necessary. And when you reduce the whips, you become more efficient.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's so important to first think about what the federal government actually does, because there's so many things that the federal government does that are kind of directly contradictory to each other and which creates inherent inefficiency in what the government's doing. I mean, you know, we support through Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act subsidies, we support renewables to cut carbon. Yeah, at the same time, we impose tariffs on imported solar panels, which make it more difficult to decarbonize. We subsidize infrastructure projects, but then enforce environmental rules, union rules, tariff rules that drive up the costs of providing that infrastructure. You know, you can go down the list and find all of these ways that policy is inherently inefficient at achieving certain objectives. And unless you're really willing to kind of tackle that and say, well, no, actually, you know, the federal government isn't going to be in the business of imposing tariffs on this sort of thing, or the federal government isn't going to regulate that industry to this extent. If you're not willing to do that, then you kind of have to have these competing regulatory frameworks. And, you know, making those more efficient may help achieve their individual objectives, but it can actually make the economy overall less efficient because it means that these contradictory objectives clash even harder than they do at the moment. So you're absolutely right. You really can't get to an effort to improve the efficiency of government unless you're really clear on what the government should be doing in the first place.
We're visiting with Ryan Bourne from the Center for Economic Studies at the Cato Institute. Can we actually beat back this landscape, this mentality that bigger, more is better? I mean, it seems as though that's been the mantra to make this bureaucracy grow, right? It's almost as if we want to be the largest employer in our country. And when government is the largest employer in any geographic region, you're in trouble, right?
Yeah, so there's around, I think, 2.3 million federal employees, obviously heavily concentrated in the Washington, D.C. area, one of the areas that's been booming in relative terms over the past couple of decades, which I think tells you all you need to know. But we shouldn't over-egg it, right? So, you know, even if you were to get to a scenario where you could eliminate three quarters of federal jobs, that would save about $300 billion per year. Now, that's, at the moment, less than a fifth of what we're borrowing every year, and only about 4% of overall spending. You know, we're spending $7 trillion per year. So the vast bulk of what the federal government does is actually transfers money from some people to other people through Social Security, through providing health care, through Medicare and Medicaid, paying debt interest to bondholders. So, you know, those things are a huge part of the budget. So we shouldn't pretend that, you know, reducing the bureaucracy through reducing headcount is like a silver bullet to this. But that bureaucracy is built up precisely because the federal government tries to do a lot and tries to do a lot across a whole range of different domains, which kind of, you know, I know I sound like a broken record, but brings me back to my original point. If we fundamentally want to shrink this bureaucracy, we first have to rationalize the number of objectives and programs that the federal government engages in.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
How about this thought, Ryan? We go from a full-time Congress to a part-time Congress. I've always believed that we meet too much. We are talking about too many things. We're involving ourselves in too many things that we know little or nothing about. And all we do is sit up there and pontificate on all kinds of different things. And they set up rules to just perpetuate them. You know, forget about us as the taxpayers.
Yeah, no, I mean, there have been periods in certain other countries where, for various reasons, it's been difficult to form a government, and the government hasn't been around for months and months on end. And yeah, the sky doesn't fall in. Things keep going. And in many ways, you don't get these flow of new damaging laws and regulations. So, you know, I'd be open to reforms of government in that direction. I think there's a real tendency to want to do something. You know, you want to show your constituents that you're kind of active and you're pushing various pieces of legislation. You want your name to be on a piece of legislation as a sponsor. And that's one way that politicians think they get credibility. There are very few votes, it seems, from just engaging in the kind of simple things that government is supposed to do well and then trying to restrain the growth of government, in part because, you know, the benefits of having a smaller government are kind of dispersed across the whole population, whereas the people who benefit from government spending more money tend to be very clear and obvious constituencies, whether that's, you know, farmers through agricultural subsidies or green energy providers through renewable subsidies. So the incentives work against small government. And, you know, I'd be totally open to some reforms of how often Congress sits as one mechanism for restraining its growth.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of some of the things that we're doing, and you wonder, what boardroom were they meeting in where they thought that this was going to be a good idea and actually put that in a piece of legislation? Now, they always hide it with about 60 other topics in that particular legislation and hope it passes and nobody notices it, which is yet another problem as to why we probably end up increasing government scope. We do it every day, voting on bills, and the general public has no idea we're even doing it.
Yeah, and I think a big problem here relates to some of the things we've been talking about earlier, which is that we have often Congress passes these big open statutes, right, that create a new regulator and a new part of the regulatory bureaucracy, and they give lots of latitude to that regulatory bureaucracy to set rules to achieve certain goals. I'd like to see us move back to a system where actually Congress kind of reclaims the mantle in some ways. So there's an act up in the Senate at the moment called the Reins Act, which would try and rein the federal bureaucracy in by essentially saying that Congress should have to pass explicitly major regulations that it wants the country to abide by, rather than doing it in this underhand way whereby they pass these big open statutes and then let federal bureaucrats kind of decide to fill in the blanks. And I think, you know, that combined with things like having sunset clauses in legislation whereby, you know, a regulatory agency or certain regulations just disappear after a period of time unless they're actively renewed by Congress, they're the sort of things that we could look at from a process perspective to stop the flow of you know, an expanded bureaucracy. So I think we kind of have to do a 1-2 punch here. Got to try and find ways of getting a retrenchment of government so we can reduce the federal bureaucracy that's already there, but then also introduce these new measures whereby it's more difficult for it to grow back.
Well, I was so happy that we were able to get you on. I read your piece. I read it a couple of times, and I said, you know, no one's really talking about this. You bring up a perspective that I know why no one inside the Beltway is talking about it, but it's something that really needs to be discussed. So we really appreciate you taking time to join us today. Appreciate your time, your insight. Job well done.
Great to be with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Ryan Bourne, R. Evan Scharf, Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics, Center for Economic Studies at the Cato Institute. He authored a piece called Memo to Doge, Smarter Tech Alone Won't Deliver Efficiency. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.